say it's an honor to be a food stamp president. Food stamps feed the hungry. Food stamps save the children. Food stamps helps the farmer. Food stamp helps the truck driver. Food stamps help the warehouse. Food stamps help the store. Food stamps hire people and feed people. Food stamps save people from starvation and malnutrition. Whenever you attack feeding the hungry, you undermine the moral authority of our faith. Give President Barack Obama a big hand. Show your love. Show your appreciation.
Hey, welcome to the show. It's Reese on the Radio. We are back on the air on this November the 1st, 2012. And we are back. Plenty of news, of course, today. I know the election is just 5 days away. Some of you cannot wait. I know some of you cannot wait until it's, you know. Most of you can't wait till it's over. But I'll be honest with you, man. I'm optimistic. I am so optimistic at this point. I don't know whether or not I'm scared. I don't know if I'm nervous. I don't want this guy to win again, okay? The polls look sketchy to me. I'm hoping that all of the polls that don't go my way are wrong. I just don't want to see this happen. I don't want to wake up and have all of those people, because I know that I'll be flooded with phone calls and emails and comments, people screaming and hollering. They want nothing more than for me to be wrong. They want nothing more than that. They want me to be wrong. They just want to shove it in my face. I know none of them will pick up the phone when I call. If Mitt Romney were to win, none of these people would answer the phone. They'd be like the Impossible Missions Force. They would disavow any knowledge of me. People would... They'd go into hiding. They'd go into witness protection program. They would never, ever come out. Never come out. And let anybody or anybody in my crew even acknowledge their existence. They'd run and hide. Punk asses. Anyway, I got a Facebook message from one of the co-hosts over there, Real Talk Blancers, today. They weren't too happy with me today. Like I care. They were upset at me calling up the Real Talk Blancers show a couple of days ago. Still fresh on their minds. They don't want to talk about the election. They know their guy is losing miserably. He's lost all momentum. They're fearful. So they've gone and they're running scared. Whatever. It's what people do. I get it. People do that often when things don't go their way. But I am going to face the heat. I am going to wake up on Wednesday morning. And I am going to keep the lines open. I am going to keep all contact numbers, email addresses, all of them, Facebook accounts. I will not come a running. I will not go a running. I will be right there. I'll be right in their faces. But anyway, I don't want to talk about the election just yet. I just want to talk about what's happening now. You see, the stories that I was looking for yesterday about Hurricane Sandy, they finally come to light. They're the stories that I'm looking for. These stories mean something. They're the real stories. Yes, I get it, the devastation. Yes, I get it. The boats and the sand dunes and the sand all over the streets and the parkways, and water damage, and the trains being shut down, and long lines of buses. No. Stories. I want stories about tumult. suffering. Those are the stories that make more sense to me. Those stories are engaging. They're, you know, they're slices of life. Story that comes to mind personally is the story I saw in the Daily News today. Did you see it? Did you see the story in the Daily News today? You probably didn't. But I want you to look it up. I posted it up on my Facebook page. You can go to Facebook, Reese on the Radio on Facebook, and you can read the story. I posted a link to it. Looters target Coney Island after Sandy sweeps through is the headline. The story says, a wave of looters followed the Sandy storm surge in Coney Island, creating a double whammy for business owners trying to pick up the obliterated pieces. Thieves started down Mermaid Avenue Tuesday morning as the Chestside water receded, turning the seaside community known for its hot dogs and tourist attractions into a lawless free zone. Or free-for-all, I guess they say here. Free-for-all. People were running in and out of Rent-A-Center, carrying these big flat-screen TVs. They were holding on tight, according to one witness. She says, quote, I couldn't understand how someone could steal a big TV in broad daylight, but no one cared, unquote. She said people were running out of a nearby Rite Aid with bags of diapers and wipes. One person said, quote, look, they've been looting our wallets for too long. And this is according to a young man who claimed he helped himself to a TV at Rent-A-Center earlier in the day. It's about time we start getting this ish back. And this kid identified himself as Jesse James. That's what he called himself, Jesse James. He says, it's about time we start getting this ish back. What about this is yours, Negro? What about this is yours? And they've been looting your wallets at Rent-A-Center? Well, I get some of what he might be saying here. He has to get a $2,000 flat screen TV. You pay Rent-A-Center monthly for it, or it's weekly, or whatever it is that they charge. I don't go to this place. And I hear that once you finish paying off of it, I think the TV costs somewhere near $8,000. But what the hell? You just don't have to go. Maybe save your money and buy yourself a flat screen TV from Best Buy. Well, where's that other place? Walmart. I think Walmart's got layaway now. You could do all of that. These people aren't looting you. They offer a service. Want to watch the big game? Want to watch the Super Bowl? Want to watch the NBA Finals on a big flat screen TV? Come on down here and pay $20 in 954 installments. Come on down to Rent-A-Center. You can come on down here today. Hurry up and buy. You don't have to go down there. These people aren't looting you. They're not holding you at gunpoint. Walk your ass out of the store. But this is what these Negroes believe. Rite Aid? Was Rite Aid looting you? You need diapers. You need baby wipes. And I understand. Look, you're struggling. Hurricane just hit you. Look, I was the first one to say it back in 2005. Late August 2005. I said it. People need to go out there. If they have to, go out there and loot. Go out there and get yourself some dry clothing. Go get yourself some food. If it takes FEMA or the local government to go out there and get you help, you have to take care of yourself. You have to do what you have to do. And go out there and take care of yourselves. Do not wait for the federal government to react to something that they probably are not equipped to do. And they weren't. They were not. FEMA was a complete joke. It was, without a doubt. Of course, most of you knuckleheads are going to put that on Bush, but go ahead, you do what you do. Truth is that that's what I told people to do. But what do you need a flat screen TV for in Brooklyn? Seriously. After a storm. A million people with no electricity. Seriously. But But these Negroes saw fit to go do it. Go out there and they found an opportunity to go get themselves some flat screen TVs. Diapers and baby wipes, I'm not really going to rip on that. You know, if you got no means, you know, and you got a crying, soiled baby, you know, I'm not going to say that. I mean, I know it's illegal, but I'm not going to rip those people. That would be dumb of me to do. You know, I in no way do I advocate criminal activity. But I just laugh at these people who are talking about they've been looting us. And it's time we get some of that money back. You've spent no money there. Somebody else may have been ripped off with 954 payments on the TV. But that doesn't mean you. Perhaps the son of a gun who already took a TV from there should go in there and maybe rip up his receipt. Get rid of his account on the computer so he doesn't have to make those payments anymore. Not that I would justify that either, but you get my point. A guy just walking up looking at a flat screen TV at a rental center saying, oh, they've been looting us for years. Let me go take one for myself. Makes no sense to me. But I'll tell you what the problem is. The problem is the current administration that has made victims out of these poor souls. That has made victims out of these morons who believe that they're being looted, that they're being pillaged in their own community. But the story gets better, ladies and gentlemen. What about the liquor store robberies? Oh, nigga, please. You didn't just say they were robbing the liquor store.
Yes.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were robbing the liquor store. They broke in the windows. They were even putting holes on the roof of liquor stores while people were handing out bottles of Hennessy and Grey Goose. The reporter in the Daily News referred to these bottles as top shelf. No, this is just nigger liquor. That's all it is. Grey Goose and Hennessy? It's nigger liquor. There's no arguing that. I didn't see anybody in there grabbing any Dom Perignon. They weren't grabbing any bottles of Moët, Hennessy, and Grey Goose. Nobody grabbed some Easy Jesus? Some E&J? Nobody grabbed any of that? I mean, is Alizé? See, I used to say that the Negroes love the A liquors. Are you familiar with the A liquor? They all end in A, or in some form of A. But I call it the A liquor. Alizé, Tanqueray, E&J, Courvoisier. That's the A liquor. That's the stuff that they don't. Do people buy Alizé anymore? I don't know anymore. I'm just out of that loop. I don't know. I think there's another one, but I'm almost certain it's Courvoisier, E&J, Alizé, Tanqueray. I don't know. I know there's another one I'm missing. I can't remember it right now. But those are the ones that are very, very popular. That's what I call nigger liquor. You can do that anyway. Put that any way you want to. But that's what it's called in my book. But that's what these fools are out there looting. Kids are starving. Food's rotting. Store owners can't keep it on the shelves. These people have an opportunity to get some food to feed their families. Some non-perishables. Cans of ravioli. You know, cans of tuna. Anything to feed themselves before they get some sort of relief. And they went for flat screen TVs and nigger liquor. How can I not laugh at you fools? Now I hear in Manhattan that people are going into dumpsters to feed themselves. Going into dumpsters. They're dumpster diving for food. Don't look that horrible now when the homeless people do it, huh? Doesn't look that disgusting and drab and animalistic when the homeless people have to do it. I mean, it's savage. This is just horrible what's happening in New York. These people are starving. Their food is rotted. They've got no electricity. Yet the media is running around talking about how the president is doing. Stop.
Sir?
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, you can correct me if I'm wrong. But Belvedere is non-perishable, right?
Belvedere? I guess you're right. Liquor isn't perishable. You think that was a smart move for them to take the liquor?
It's consumable.
Well, I'm
when you're
just
thirsty. You're thirsty.
That's not what you drink when you're thirsty.
Oh. Try telling that to a Kennedy.
That stuff when you're thirsty. That's not a thirst quencher. I mean, I didn't hear anybody grabbing, you know, like bottles of Sprite, maybe some orange juice to go with the Grey Goose. I mean, what are you drinking straight up?
You try telling that to a Kennedy and our last first daughters.
Oh, you mean Barbara and Laura Bush? I mean, Jenna Bush. Jenna and Barbara.
Barbara. I don't think Laura, but I think Barbara Senior and Barbara Junior and Jenna. Yeah.
Well, I understand.
I'm sure. What do you say?
Jenna and Barbara, I think they like to drink beer. I don't think they were heavy liquor drinkers. They're from Texas. Those girls drink beer.
Tequila.
Probably some tequila shots. Probably without a doubt some tequila shots. I believe that. They probably got in with a little bit of tequila shots. Why not?
Well, I know in Connecticut we're still up here under 3 feet of water, but I'm still waiting on my Chinese delivery.
So wait. So hold on. You've got 3 feet or 3 inches?
No. Some parts of Connecticut still it's severely underwater. I mean they're rescuing folks up off of rooftops down on the shoreline. I mean, but these are people we're talking that are sitting down there in literally million-dollar homes. We're talking about Katharine Hepburn neighbors, her house. All that down there is underwater still. And they're rescuing people off of rooftops and all that goody.
Hmm.
She lives in Osage. In fact, as a matter of fact, that is where the Obamas were shopping. They were looking at Katharine's house.
That's right, Katharine Hepburn's house. You were talking about that a couple of weeks ago. I do remember saying that.
Well, hopefully they're not watching the local news.
Why?
They're probably not going to want it now. They're probably not going to want it right now.
Hmm.
A lot of stuff is underwater, dude. I was talking to Bob Backlund, who's got a couple of houses down there.
So, has there already been any news on him as far as like is he devastated yet, or does he have like what do you call it? He's got any damage to report, or
he really couldn't talk. He had to leave. Unfortunately, when I did catch back up to him, and it was sad news to report, but he had to run home because his mom had fallen ill, but he didn't catch her in time. And I'll leave it at that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But I'll get a damage report. Cause I usually sometimes in the late summer, early fall, when they're not being rented as much, I can usually get one for a weekend.
Right.
Yeah. Huh. But that whole area down there was devastated. And wow, Connecticut Light and Power up here, they're lying to the governor. They have the governor out looking like an idiot. I think they're tracking our trucks up here with like GPS,
mm-hmm.
and they're sticking, I think, GPS, the trackers like onto trees and onto telephone poles, because they're being caught down there. And the governor's on one street where the GPS said that there's trucks, and then there's no trucks there on the street.
So
they're investigating. It's hell up here down on the shoreline. I mean, inland, we were fine. We're fine, but it's really down in the ritzy. I mean, Connecticut shoreline is very, very pricey, territory.
So are you, like, is it, okay, because I understand you're saying, like, your neighborhood, you've got, like, three feet of water nearby you, right?
Well, I mean, not too far. Maybe some parts of, like, Old Weathersfield, which is, you know, it's funny because it seemed like Sandy really hit the rich people up here.
Hmm.
Really took out the rich neighborhoods. Greenwich, Connecticut, underwater.
Well, considering that Greenwich, Connecticut is right by the beach, you know. I mean, that's opposite the other side of the Long Island Sound, right?
Right, and the part of Weathersfield that got hit, which is pretty much like Greenwich, is right on the Connecticut River.
Yeah, but you know what? I've been to Greenwich, Connecticut before. I look at some of those areas. I can see some of the beachfront property. I can see some damage there. But I look at some of the other places that are there. A lot of those houses are built up as opposed to flat. I think their biggest problem is that some of that area, the beach is high ground, and behind the beach, it actually goes downhill.
To a degree, yeah, in a lot of places, yeah.
Exactly. So I think that's where most of the damage sort of happens. So if they're underwater, I mean, they're going to be there. The sad part is that when the tide actually rolls out, some of those areas are still going to have water in it because it's sort of like a pool because the way that those streets are designed.
Well, when the storm hit up here, I mean, the major part of the storm hit up here, it hit during high tide and a full moon.
Oh.
So the recipe was for disaster.
Yeah, it absolutely
was. It was a great recipe for disaster, but
it's not like those areas haven't been hit before, JC. It's not like those areas.
But not like that. We just had Hurricane Irene last year.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
And it looked nothing like it looks now.
You had it a year ago. As you said, it was like almost a year ago to the day. What did you have, like October 29th, October 30th?
No, that we had Winter Storm Alfred, which was like that freak winter blizzard. It was on
right.
About 1 year to the day. Irene was like 2 months prior. It was in like September.
Wow. Yeah, because actually I know someone. I met someone at a bar up in Mystic, Connecticut, and their wedding was the day when Alfred hit.
And Mystic, it still has no lights. They have 90% of the town is without lights.
She told me it was a mess. And I said, did you think anything was sort of like, you know, was that sort of like, did you look at that as like a sign? It's like, oh my God, this marriage isn't going to work. God's crying. Like, God is shouting down to us, don't do it. So I couldn't imagine. Plus, that's a late month to have a wedding anyway.
Well, fall weddings are beautiful, but you don't expect, like, major storms to hit, especially winter storm like we did last year.
Yeah.
And that was the only storm that we got after that. We had the second warmest winter on record.
Yeah, but it's still, again, it's Mystic. It's the Northeast. I don't put anything past it, you know. It's Massachusetts in late October. I don't put anything past it. That kind of stuff happens. So, you know, I don't believe it one bit. That it's not likely to happen. But again, right. I know New York got hit pretty bad. I know that people didn't know how exactly to respond to it. I knew New York was never, ever going to be able to prepare for this storm. And I think that's, for me, part of that is due to the fact that Mayor Bloomberg is not very reactionary. He's very proactive. He's very reactive. And
well, there's no way.
You've seen storms happen under his watch in New York City, and he's been an absolute failure. And I think that's the reason why so many people out there have not—they've not been able to recover.
Well, you know what? I tell you, nobody's asking a question as to why there's a broken crane 90 stories up on a high rise.
Yeah. Yeah.
And knowing that storm was coming, that crane should have been brought down 2 days prior.
Please.
Now it's dangling there, ready to fall.
They even went up. It's funny because the new Freedom Tower, the contractors there even told everyone that they went up there to make sure that it was secured for the hurricane because they were concerned about it.
Yeah.
And no
that
one
should have come down.
No one did anything about that 57th Street crane. But again, it's what you expect.
And also, I mean, come on, how could they have not known that the lower Manhattan wouldn't get hit as bad as it did when all of the from mid Manhattan all the way down is a former landfill.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, but they're going to recover. They're saying that things are going to be back to normal in another 10 to 11 days. We'll see what how they deal with it and how they get back from it. But I don't think that it's even going to be that long. I think with the federal government now involved and the Army Corps of Engineers now involved, I think they're going to get a lot of work done, and they're going to get it done real fast. It shouldn't be that bad.
Hopefully.
Yeah. But the looters, they're the funniest. I love the fact that New York Daily News asked the looters and got interviews with them. I still think that's the most brilliant thing I've heard in a long time.
Wow.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be back shortly. Plenty of stuff to get into here when we get back. We've got to talk about the new pastor in the crosshairs, of Republicans and conservatives alike, another racist pastor. And we'll tell you about his comments when we get back. Stick around. It's Reese on the Radio, and here's Boot Camp. I love this song. I haven't played it in a while. I played it yesterday, but I haven't played it in a long time, so I like hearing it. We'll be back. It's Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
This one here, let's take a second to think back.
The first year rap was done. The first time I saw a bat was fun. I was in my living room practicing, watching the tube, back to light, different strokes in the afternoon. Scarface, smoke weed and flick. Everybody who pumped coke back then was feeling for grit. 86, no fade, Afro pops and no stage. Your whole average spot seen lots of it. Lee patches, Cassell glasses, straight boomers and rumors of rap not lasting to the classic. 89 came through. Top fade, Taylor made Gucci.
Let's do it.
Jordan was champ, Mike Tyson was amped. Reagan was the president, the border was a place to camp. Just think back like this as you reminisce.
Think back when Earth and Stan had the monster, baddest bitches, skin slicks was never hunter. Think back, me hosting for Red City, Death Comedy Jam, Itty Bitty Titty Committee. Think back when Martin was on, Jazzy Jeff, Fresh Prince, Summertime was the song. Think back, Buffalo was the spot. Got
sitches,
then you got jump set
it in
your shot.
Picture in your mind, a place in a time where we all can go, don't need no to shine. All you gotta do is be true to who you is. I'm original and God is my influence. Hip hop, bebop, jazz, rock, music, palladium and rooftop, Latin quarter booming. We keep it moving to the beats.
tuned into the streets. The rumors and the passages preach. Rap, I'm master, so I teach. Each I touch, respect the power of the microphone in my clutch. Say, ma, your little boy's all grown up. Hey, y'all, I told you all we got is us. I love pops, he raised me on some good old soul. Marvin Gaye, Curtis Mayfield, and Nina Simone. Songs in the key of life to hold. When the streets get cold, always focus when I'm reaching for goals.
PNC right here, you know? Let no man take a thunder, bitch. And no bitch for that matter, you know?
This is for my 18 and under, 20 and over. Walking around with the weight of their clothes and on their shoulders, look at me. 26-year-old, years unfold. Driving something balls, about a year old. Did the goal, set my game up to grade. Rosary, throwback, exclusives and haze. Seen holes and dough, come and go. Remembering the rain, the crack, and power of dope. Witness miracles of babies being born, niggas being killed. Niggas getting killed, babies born again. Showed you block love, techno, marine, brackling. The classy lockman, new Jacob thing. Thin, 4, 5, 6, truck navigator, Escalade. Bitches want dick, took it from the end of 89 through 99. I'm the nigga 2000 and beyond.
Metal lock lemon, wood sevens on the guard neck, they the ghetto park reverend. Lead patches, got snatch, D's in the hatchback, the ease, nigga, pass that. Benetton bag, nigga, Doris. Niggas like, son, you fly, yo, I can't afford it. D-step niggas, in the party, we tangle with anybody, jump in the train, punch guardian name. Don't believe me, put a stack on it. Cops like, you can drink, put a bag on it, back in the day.
What's the day's mathematics? Saturday night specials, now what's automatic? When crack appeared, DDR's got sold, shorty asses disappeared. I dollar Tigra, 8-4 coke, my man Earl Manigault. Karate flicks, Gucci chicks, favorite team, the New York Knicks.
Sing back now. Your rap is the thing turns into the passage of time, yeah.
Sing back now.
Fine, we no borrow, we no lend, go tell them we are set friends, yeah.
Sing back now.
Yo, all three just and raw, them just can't comprehend, yeah.
Sing back now.
Yo, we said, even though the time keep changing.
Sing back.
Yo, 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 never going uptown, 125, you know what I'm saying? I'm gonna follow and shit. They don't know.
In the last few years, America's been knocked down. 23 million people can't find full-time work. And we borrow $4 billion every single day, much of it from China. When someone doesn't get the job done, you gotta hold them accountable. Obama's second term would be a rerun of the first, and our country just couldn't survive that. We need someone who can turn it around fast, and that man is Mitt Romney. There's not much time left, but the future of our country is at stake.
American Crossroads is responsible for the content of this advertising.
I don't think you or anybody who's been watching me campaign would suggest that in any way we have tried to divide the country. We've always tried to bring the country together.
The question in this election is, which way do we go? Do we go forward towards a new vision of an America in which prosperity is shared, or do we go backward to the same policies that got us into this mess in the first place?
We've always tried to bring the country together.
We're not trying to push financial reform because we begrudge success that's fairly earned. I mean, I do think at a certain point you've made enough money.
We've always tried to bring the country together.
It is important for me to go ahead and affirm that I think same-sex couples should be able to get married.
The private sector is doing fine.
We've always tried to bring the country together.
This month we're announcing the 2012 launch of African Americans for Obama.
We've always tried to bring the country together.
Visit Latinos.BarackObama.com to get involved today, because we are greater together. Estamos Unidos.
We've always tried to bring the country together.
This unbelievable American system that we had that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you've got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
I don't think you or anybody who's been watching the campaign would suggest that in any way tried to divide the country. We've always tried to bring the country together.
Reason.
We're back, Teresa on the radio, 35 minutes after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com, November the 1st, 2012, day after Halloween. There's been no actual horrible Halloween stories that I've heard. I'm actually impressed by that. Well, that's because, you know, usually you don't hear any horror stories until after the 4th of July, which, of course, July 5th is now the official murder, death, kill day. Can't wait for next year. That's going to be great when that happens. So this time, Jeremiah Wright is not in the news, folks, when it comes to racist pastors of the Obama administration. Now, I don't know whether or not anyone's ever heard of this particular individual, but his name is Reverend Joseph Lowry. He's 91 years old. Incidentally, Reverend Lowry started the Southern Baptist Leadership Church in the South. I'm almost certain it was in Georgia, with Martin Luther King Jr. So this guy would be considered by most a civil rights leader. And he has a church called the St. James Baptist Church in Forsyth, Georgia. Now, apparently he gave this speech talking to people about the election, which I hear that a lot of people frown on. You know, the clergy should not be talking about, you know, presidential elections or politics or telling people in their parish about who it is that they should vote for. But we know that black churches have ignored that for years. They don't pay attention to it. They don't care. In fact, you know, Barack Obama, in his, you know, African Americans for Barack Obama video or commercial, it was telling people how to join these certain councils at their churches to get out the vote. So that's always been ignored. So much for the separation of church and state, as most liberals like to scream. So Reverend Joseph Lowry is there, and he had a couple of quotes that were caught by the press that was there, of course, because this man is famous to some degree. Reverend Joseph Lowry gave the benediction at the inauguration for President Obama on January 20th, 2009. And he says in that speech, quote, "I'm frightened by the level of hatred and bitterness coming out of this election." Now, you would think that he would be talking about the Obama administration and their campaign. But I'm sure, you know, he only meant the bitterness coming from the Romney campaign. But whatever. But the comment that strikes me, and there were a few, of course, that whole comment about when I was a young militant, you know, I used to say that all white people are going to hell. I've since, you know, backpedaled or pushed back from that, but I'm starting to go back to my old ways. I, you know, whatever. It's a 91-year-old Negro. We know that never, ever changed. You know, Chris Rock said it best. Old black people are the most racist people in the world. Even Chris Rock says that. Not that I'm giving any credit or any credence to Chris Rock. But I know this. It's something that's known within the black community. The older you are as an African American, the more racist you are. Probably.
Now, how old is this man?
91.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
And what thirsty ass reporter stuck a microphone in this old man's face?
No. They didn't put a microphone. He was giving a speech. He was giving
and
a speech
giving
to his congregation at the St. James Baptist Church in Forsyth, Georgia. Now,
I've never heard of him. He can't be that big a preacher.
Well, the man gave the benediction at the inauguration. It's a big deal. The guy started the Southern Baptist Leadership Church with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This guy's a big deal.
Is he?
Yeah, he's a big deal. Why wouldn't he be? The guy got the Congressional Medal of Freedom from Barack Obama later that year.
Wow.
This guy's a big deal. But see, here's the part that, like I said, that other thing about, you know, white men, white people are going to hell and all that other stuff, that's nothing. This is the part, JC, that he said that made me go, Wow. Love it, love it, love it. He said, I don't know what kind of nigga wouldn't vote with a black man running. And it was talking about the 350,000 people in Georgia who did not, who were 350,000 blacks who did not vote in the 2008 election against Barack Obama and John McCain. I don't know what kind of nigga wouldn't vote with a black man running.
Wow.
Now, I remember the pastors who were running around in the late 2000s, was it? I don't remember what it was, but I think they were burying, or early 2000s, late 90s maybe, they were all talking about burying the N-word. Had a funeral for it in the whole nine yards. And this 91-year-old Negro, and as is at his congregation saying, I don't know what kind of nigga wouldn't vote with a black man running. What kind of nigga? My follow-up question to him would be, Reverend Lau, what's a nigga to do when there were two black men running?
Wow. I can understand it to a degree. And and by saying that, I mean it this way. He comes from a time of when whites were turning the hoses on the blacks. So he's still bitter by that.
I'm sure he is.
He's still bitter by that. And on the same token, he comes from the old school of thought that watching African Americans like Jay-Z and 50 Cent become rich and large off of sweat and insulting their own people, and especially in women and stuff. So he's bitter at the old white folks from back then, and he's also bitter at the younger generation and their success. He's just basically a bitter old man. I mean, I can understand him being racist because Chris Rock is right. The older the black person, the more racist they are. And like I said, that's understood because it comes from that time. But on the same token, he's been around and has seen enough to know not to have made such a statement.
Well, how about this? Does Reverend Joseph Lowry, who's 91 years old,
mm-hmm.
not know that the people that he was fighting against are the same people that this reverend is now endorsing? Like, does
right.
he not understand that? If the guy understood and knew Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., why would this man be asking for more government intrusion into the average black person's life? Or in his words, niggas.
Right, right. Well, I'm like the most, pretty much like most African Americans, he's not up or knowledgeable enough about the history of A, the parties. B, he basically goes with what he hears or what he's heard, and I know he's heard a lot. I mean, I don't think that he and Even in his, I don't even call him frail, Mike, because if he's making statements like that, he's far from being frail. But even he in his own mind would have never thought that Martin Luther King's ideology is pretty much the same as the Republican Party's. He would have been a Republican.
You think he would be, all things considered.
Right, but this guy, he is completely oblivious to the history of politics and politics itself. All he preaches is what he knows, and that is whitey versus black, and you know that same old excuse that has gotten black people through so all these years.
Yeah, but see, this is what I always call the idiocy of the liberal left, and especially
I want to say, I use the word clergy, but the clergy of the left, especially black theology, it, the lunacy of it is that here it is, this black pastor who knows that his communities are in shambles, who knows that the state of affairs within the black family are in shambles. He knows that young people and their prospects and their dreams or aspirations in life are in shambles. And he knows that every day of his life he has pushed and prodded people to go vote for the same pieces of garbage who continue to keep their communities, their lives, and their schools in ruin. And he's sitting up here saying, oh, I just need you to vote for the nigger. Come on.
Well, then you got to remember also, Reese, you have to remember, he comes from the old hustler set that gets taken care of by the congregation, has been his entire life, A. B, the only time he ever comes out to make a statement with regards to anything that's going on in current times is when he's told, well, you're gonna have to say something about this because you once had a name during the civil rights movement, and they're gonna be looking for you to make a statement on this, and this is what you should say. I mean, nobody's heard from this guy before the inauguration. Well, I mean, you haven't heard from this guy since when? The late early 70s.
Probably.
When they were asking him, when they were still interviewing him about his relationship with Martin Luther King?
Probably right about that. So you think it's not really much of anything, right? It's not much to
do. No, it's not. No, because this guy doesn't care how his congregation's living as long as they fill them baskets two or three times on Sunday. And
you know,
fry that chicken on Sunday afternoon.
You know, I believe this, you know, and I talked to, you know, I remember when I used to, you know, when I used to talk to Silky Slim down in New Orleans. I shouldn't say New Orleans, in Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge.
You know, and he said, you know, there are a lot of people down there in the South, that's their biggest problem, is that they can't stand the pastors in their community because, you know, only thing that those guys peddle is misfortune.
Yeah, hope and faith.
You know, Yeah, exactly. They peddle faith, and they peddle it like really, like two-bit hustlers. You know, it's like, you know, talking about keeping the church alive so that you have a place to worship. And, you know, these men are celebrities, if you will. Now, look, and I'll be the first one to say it, you know, like, I like a guy like Joel Osteen. I like him. I like this guy. You know, I know the guy's making a fortune.
I don't like him anymore. I don't like him anymore.
You don't?
No, he's been touched by Oprah. No.
It's a wrap. I don't care about that. I don't think he's been touched by Oprah. I think Oprah finally came around and said, I got to start bringing people on that I don't really agree with, but I need to get some ratings. I don't think he's been touched by Oprah. I think Joel Osteen is his own man. He don't need Oprah. He's all right. But, I mean, I understand that he's making his money from the pulpit. I understand he's making money through donations. I understand what he's doing. But there is something that I see in him that I don't see out of a guy like Creflo Dollar. You know? Or guys like, what's that other black guy that's got the big black church that P. Diddy's in?
T.D. Jakes.
No, not him. Not T.D. Jakes. It's another one. Younger guy.
Bishop Eddie Long?
No, I know him. That's another one. That's another one in Atlanta, right?
Right.
There's another guy. I want to say it ain't Donnie McClurkin. It's another guy who's, he's in New York. It's a big name, man, in the New York area. It's probably not relevant because I can't remember. But I see those guys, you know. Creflo Dollar. I mean, how am I going to give my money to a guy named Creflo Dollar? I mean, how can I not associate him with Don Magic Wand?
Exactly. And you know what's funny? I used to confuse them all the time.
From a pimp. You know what I mean? Your name
I used to confuse them all the time. Reverend Run, not too long ago, a couple years ago, gave this guy a Bentley for his birthday.
He gave who a Bentley for his birthday?
Creflo.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Reverend Run gave Creflo Dollar a Bentley for his birthday?
Yes.
Stop it.
Yeah.
You see, that, to me, I find that impressive. The reason why I say I like this guy, Joel Osteen, because this guy, I feel as though the only thing he ever tells everyone in his congregation or when I listen to is, I always watch him a little bit after Fox News Sunday. Right? At 10 o'clock he comes on here locally in the morning. And I always watch him, and he inspires me. I always hear him say, talking about what you need to do, what you need to say, that positive energy thing. It's a great, great thing that he does in inspiring people. I feel better when I listen to him, and I don't have to pay him a dime. I don't have to give him a dime. But I watch that program. He gets my ratings from my cable box. But I watch him and I'm feeling inspired. Because I feel as though he's kind of giving me something for nothing. You know?
He reminds me of a cross. He kind of reminds me of a cross of PTL. Jim Baker and what's that guy named? Joe. The self-help guy. Tony.
Tony, why am I forgetting Tony's last name?
You kind of run into a cross
Tony
between those two.
Tony Robbins,
yeah.
Yeah. Does it with a big-ass smile on his face.
Yes.
That's what I love about him, because he's always happy. Well, if I had that much money, I'd probably be happy every day, too. But he says there's no reason for you to be happy. You have to choose to be happy. You have to choose, are you going to be happy or not?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I just like his style. But I look at Creflo Dollar, and I just kind of look at him and just go, I don't know. There's just something. But this pastor, you know, this guy who gave the benediction, Reverend Joseph Lowry at 91, I mean, this is exactly what's wrong with, you know, black churches today. Reverend Al Sharpton, Reverend Jesse Jackson, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, this is what's wrong with the current establishment black church leader. And this is why you guys, I mean, this guy would probably advocate the looting that happened in Coney Island the other day.
He can get his liquor cheap.
Yeah. Get it any way you can, damn it. Get that money.
He's 91. He's probably drinking pure corn liquor anyways down in his basement. He seems like the type they probably got slaves himself in the
each
backyard.
Each and every one of those bums are corrupt.
Of course. They are corrupt.
And
I'm not going to be corrupt.
I don't mean corrupt in the sense of, like, financially. I don't think that they're looting their community. You know, look, you have a choice of whether or not you put anything in that offering bucket when it comes by. Lord knows I didn't plenty of times. Sometimes I did. When I really, really liked the service, like, you know, if I went to a service I really liked it, of course I would give some money. I'd want to support it if I felt that I've gotten some inspiration and some wise words from there and had a really, really good feeling about my experience. You know, I do the same thing at the museum. You know, I always look at going into a church like going into a museum. You know, you don't have to pay us something, but it'd be nice if you'd offer something. So I go to the church, and I believe the pastor is great, and the chorus sings well, and I've enjoyed myself, and I had quite a good time. The service was, you know, really, really one of those places that was uplifting. I kind of feel like, they're asking for a couple of dollars. Why not? I might even toss in $5. Why not? Just to support. Look, I got some inspiration today. Your words were enlightening. I get it. I understand.
Listen.
You know, I can do that. But what they're doing to those same people who show up every day, you know? I mean, I got a great story. I'll tell you this great story, Jason. You're going to love this story, greatest church story ever. Okay? I was working on 195th Street and Jamaica Avenue in Queens. Right? And there was a guy who was the superintendent of the buildings there. Now, I was doing odd jobs for him when I was about 16 years old. I was homeless at the time, so he would give me some money, you know, to do some odd jobs. Maybe I'd paint a wall, get rid of some graffiti, things like that. I did a lot of work for him, you know, on that. Most people would call it child labor, but whatever. What I did, put some money in my pocket. So he was kind enough to invite me to his daughter's christening at this church in Queens. I don't remember exactly where the place was, but I remember getting there and driving with them, dressed up nice, got there. And so the service is actually going on. So it's not like a christening where you just walk in, the christening takes place and everybody goes. It's actually taking place during a regular Sunday service. So there we go, we're having the service and everything, and it comes that time when the offering plate comes around. And it's a black church. The offering plate comes around and, you know, goes through every parishioner there. And when it finally reaches the last usher, one usher had already gone, you know, up to the front of the church. The second usher goes there and they meet him. And usually, every church I have been in, the offering plate is just put somewhere in the back. And then we continue with the service. But that didn't happen this day. Never been to the church. They count the money out of the offering plate in front of all of us. That was strike one. So I'm sitting there after the counter, and I'm looking around, and I don't want to say anything. I don't want anybody to know that I'm paying attention to this, and I don't want to create any outburst. Or, you know, I don't want to create any attention, give any attention to myself. I'm only 16 years old. So sure enough, after he counts the money, strike two. And he tells the pastor of the church that they're $100 short. And then strike three. He tells us that if you can give us $100, if we can reach $100, folks, we'd really appreciate it. And they stop the service and pass around the offering plate again. And they cried until they got their money. And I thought, in my heart of hearts, I didn't think they'd get it. But I kind of feel like everyone there felt foolish. And they gave up more money. And it was a small congregation. It couldn't have been bigger than like the schoolhouse or a little house on the prairie. And they got the money. And they counted it again and nodded to the pastor and said, "All right, you're good." And then continued. I could stop. I was done by the end of it. I was done. It's the only thing that stuck with me. It's been stuck with me since I was a kid. Never forget it. I think that was the day I literally, black churches, it was a wrap for me. I couldn't believe it happened. And I couldn't believe it. It was sick.
Listen, I battled with him in my early days in radio. I walk up into a church and there's damn ATMs in the lobby.
Oh,
I'm stuck on them on the radio.
You know what? Listen to me. You know Reverend Floyd Flake. Floyd Flake in Queens. Got one too. Got an ATM in earth. It's a rap. It's a money-making scheme. Oh, man, it's so hard.
The church owns the ATMs. They're getting you, if you forget your money in your purse or don't have any cash on you, take your ATM debit card right out to the lobby, paid $250 to the church to borrow money from their machine, get money out of their machine just to give it to them in the offering plate so they can put it back in there to take your money again next week.
Oh, man, we'll take a break when we get back. Sex scandal in the Democratic Party. Bob Menendez of New Jersey. Dominican Republic prostitutes. We'll tell you the story when we get back. Stick around. It's Reset the Week.
About to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
All I know is we got 5,000 niggers in this county who ain't registered to vote yet. And as far as I'm concerned, they never will. So you can tell your stiff suits up there in Washington, D.C., that they ain't going to change us one bit. Unless it's over my dead body. Or a lot of dead niggers.
Hey, what's up? We are back 2 minutes after the hour right here on Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com. It's November the 1st, 2012. More Benghazi fallout. We got to get into that, and we'll get into that in the next half hour. So stick around, because we will get into that soon enough. Now, listen, briefly, I've got to get into this little this little story about Bob Menendez. First of all, I don't like this guy at all. I never have, probably never will. But apparently, Bob Menendez was in the Dominican Republic last Easter, and according to some prostitutes that are there, two of them, they claim that while Bob Menendez, Senator Bob Menendez, was there, that he had offered the prostitutes $500 apiece for sex acts. And the women have given interviews. They are on tape. You can see it yourself at the Daily Caller. Just go to the dailycaller.com. You can see it as their lead story. They broke it sometime around 2 a.m. last night, or this early this morning, I should say. And Bob Menendez has already responded. In fact, Geraldo Rivera had him on his local ABC show in New York, and Bob Menendez has denied it. In fact, he's the only person who's Geraldo, that is. He's the only person who's bothered to ask him. But the story reads, two women from the Dominican Republic told the Daily Caller that Democratic New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez paid them for sex earlier this year. In interviews, the two women said they met Menendez around Easter at the Casa de Campo, an expensive 7,000-acre resort in the Dominican Republic. They claim Menendez agreed to pay them $500 for sex acts, but in the end, they received only $100. The women spoke through a translator in the company of their attorney, Meliano Figueroa. Both asked that their identities remain obscure for fear of reprisals in the Dominican Republic. When shown a photograph of Senator Menendez, the women said they recognized him as the man with whom they had sexual relations at Casa de Campo. Both said they were brought to the resort with the understanding that they would be paid for sex. Neither knew the identity of the man at the time. Both claimed to recognize him later as Senator Menendez. He called himself Bob, one said. One woman said Menendez wooed her with compliments like beautiful before they slept together. The other woman recounted with apparent bitterness receiving from an intermediary only $100 of the $500 that she was promised. He lies, she said of Menendez. He says one thing and does another. Yeah, I guess so. According to the translator's summary, Menendez was nice at first,
But then later, he did not seem to care about her. You're a whore. He didn't seem to care about her. You're a whore. Anyway, Menendez, who is 58 and divorced, has represented New Jersey in the U.S. Senate as a Democrat since he was appointed to fill the vacancy in 2005. He's up for re-election this November 6th. This could affect him. Asked about the allegations, Menendez spokeswoman Tricia Enright refused to answer any questions on the subject. "We're not going to respond to a completely false allegation," she wrote by email. It is known that Senator Menendez has been a regular visitor to the Dominican Republic. On at least one occasion, according to a news account, Menendez has been a guest at the Casa de Campo home of a friend and campaign donor named Solomon Melgian, an ophthalmologist and the owner of an eye clinic in Florida. Melgian has donated some $14,000 to Menendez's campaign since 1993, with the bulk of it coming since he became U.S. Senator, according to Federal Election Commission's data collected by the Center for Responsive Politics. Melgian also appears to have lent Menendez the use of his plane on several occasions. Menendez's 2012 public schedule shows no events listed for Easter or the following 3 days. Aircraft records obtained by the Daily Caller show that Melgian's plane left Florida the morning of Easter Sunday this year, stopped at Teterboro's private airport near Menendez's home in New Jersey, and flew on to the Dominican Republic. 2 days later, it returned to the United States from a private airport near Casa de Campo. It's funny that here it is, liberals, you know, who keep screaming and hollering about, you know, the poor and the downtrodden. And here's two women, prostitutes, started their own business, selling themselves. I mean, what do you think Bob Menendez said to them when he offered them $500 and then taxed them $400, as liberals do, taxed him first. He taxed them $400 and gave them $100. I imagine it went something like this. You know, Dominican Republic has got roads and bridges. You have a mother and father who made love and gave birth to you. You got a vagina. You didn't build that. I bet you any amount of money he said it. You got a vagina. You didn't build that. Somebody else built that. Somebody else made that happen. Here's $100. I'm putting him out of money he said that. The number is 347-308-8701. Who do we got on the line here?
Hey, before you go to, I don't believe the story.
What's that?
I don't believe that story.
You don't believe it?
You find me 7,000 acres of prime, expensive land in the Dominican Republic.
Oh, come on, there's out there. Come on, man. Even Charlie Rangel's got a prime spot out in the Dominican Republic.
Share an island with Haiti. It can't be that prime.
Derek the Bounty Hunter, who calls here all the time, man. He says, listen, man, you take a small fortune here in the United States, man. Take your money out of Dominican Republic, man, and you get a palatial pad out there, man. It's real easy. Not all Dominican Republic is run down. That ain't Haiti. I know it's near Haiti, but it ain't Haiti.
It's not near Haiti. They share an island.
I know, but it ain't Haiti. It's just, those two places are stark in comparison.
We're talking about take Connecticut, cut it in half by the Connecticut River.
Still,
one half
Greenwich
is Dominican Republic,
like
the other
Haven,
half is Haiti.
Friend. Greenwich and New Haven are right next to each other. Those places are ardently different. Let's go to the phone. The number is 347-308-8701. Who do we got on the line here? Yes, you, sir.
Hello.
Hey, who's this?
Hello.
Yes.
That's Joe.
Oh, is that Joe?
Yeah, this
yeah.
is Joe.
Hey, how are you?
Not too bad. You know, I wanted to comment on the Menendez story and simply say that, you know, if this were a Republican, they would be trying in any way that they could to connect it to Romney campaign, to try to, you know, engage in defamation of character on Romney and try to twist in a way that would somehow hurt his campaign. And, you know, you're simply not seeing that with this circumstance. You know, with the comments from the senator who's running for election in Indiana, his name eludes me right now. His comment about abortion was just placated and spun and disseminated.
Oh, you're talking about Murdoch?
Murdoch, yeah, that's right, Murdoch.
Murdoch, yeah.
You're trying, I mean, you have Chris Matthews trying to somehow link Murdoch to the Romney campaign, but yet you have a sex scandal, and the liberal media is simply just, or at least in SNBC, from what I know of, you know, that sure, they were reluctant to break the story even, but you know, they're not talking about it. Just as they're not talking about Libya, they'd rather focus on, you know, how Obama saved the auto industry. He rode in on his, you know, philosophical white horse and saved the auto industry, when its history proves that, as Mitt Romney was saying, that if you take companies through a Chapter 11 bankruptcy process, and what a lot of liberals aren't getting is, well, you know, there wasn't enough capital in the market to take this company through a bankruptcy process. You don't need capital.
But you know what I found out?
Process.
I think
you
Menendez,
the company of their debts. And we would, you know, what Romney didn't want to do is set a dangerous precedent of bailing out fiscally irresponsible companies, on top of the fact that the marketplace was at play. You cannot keep creating crappy products and raise the cost of production. You know, it's just not going to work, and individuals end up going elsewhere as what will happen in a free market. But just wanted to throw that thought out there.
No, I hear you loud and clear, Joe. Let's take another call. The number is 347-308-8701. Who do we have on the line?
This is Bob Menendez, and I resent you trying to get me involved and confusing me with Torricelli.
How do you like that line?
Have done that, but I would never do that. Bo Shizzle.
What did you think of my line, Bob Menendez to the prostitutes?
All I can tell you is we share a continent with Nicaragua. I mean, you know, does that, you know, when they said, well, the island is shared, well, you know, we share a continent with Nicaragua. What the hell does that mean? You know, East and West Berlin share the fatherland. You know,
let's bring in Edward. How you doing, Edward?
Hey, great, Reese. How you doing? Hey, I just wanted to say, I want to ask, any of you guys ever been to the Dominican Republic?
No, but Derek the Bounty Hunter has been dying for me to go for years, decades.
I live in the Dominican Republic.
I've been there, and the real shame in this story is this school offered $500 for anything, or even $100. You buy some of them a couple of Presidentes and some empanadas, and you're good to go.
Well, remember, these are supposed to be high-class hookers.
There's no such thing in the Dominican Republic.
What's that?
There is no such thing. They've all got big booties, you know, about the same complexion. You know, there's no such thing as a high-class or low-class.
In other words, they're fake Cubans.
Similar, yeah.
I can't believe, personally, because the fact that these women said, I mean, come on, Bob Menendez is not one of those faces in the crowd, if you get my meaning. You know, how do you not recognize this guy?
I've got a question, Reese, seriously.
Sure.
And that's the timing. I've always was brought up on the political axiom, if it's too close to election day, no matter who it is, and it's bad, try to discount it. Now, if the stuff was brought up last month, I think it might have had more legs. Now, I'm not talking about his third leg. I'm talking about news story legs.
No, I agree. I think this is too close to the election to change anything. I don't think it's going to affect him in any way. The fact that barely anyone is even talking about it in the media, like I said, one real source of, I guess, news outlet in mainstream media to some degree was Geraldo asked him about it on his local radio show, which reached
New Jersey.
Were you
on last night? This is the first time I've heard you.
No, I was on last night.
I was going to say, welcome back. I hope you didn't suffer much damage.
No, we didn't. We were actually pretty good. We didn't.
I mean, I saw
your
weather broadcast. What the hell you think you were, Channel 5?
Like,
you know, I just wanted to comment on the auto bailout situation, though, because I view this as being pretty hilarious. I've done some extensive research on it, and, you know, I can't believe that Forbes magazine and Marchionne came out and lied about them sending jeep over to China.
About them sending what to China?
I can't believe Forbes magazine, Marchionne, came out and lied that bailout money was not utilized in moving Jeep or Chrysler's Jeep operation over to China. Also, GM used the stimulus money to open up 5 factories in Mexico. So, you know, I think it's fair to call Obama the outsourcer-in-chief to a certain extent. But what I find, you know, fascinating is just this layer upon layer upon layer of deceit. I know that Chrysler has an interest in this. They probably would like to see Obama reelected because Obama has set the precedent of corporate welfare. So, therefore, you know, they'd like to see that continue. They can be as fiscally irresponsible as they'd like. And
It has more to do with the UAW than it has to do with anything else.
Because the
auto bailout didn't do anything but take out the CEOs and put the union bosses in charge.
Yep.
And those, I mean, it was, you know, it's crony capitalism 101. You know, as far as what they did, Chrysler's biggest stake in that is letting the unions run this and literally get a slush fund from the federal government, which is why they are doing any and everything. Chrysler's got a stake in this too. Think about what Forbes magazine stands to gain in all of this. Forbes magazine puts out this bogus article that discounts the truth about jobs being shipped, you know, the Fiat Corporation buying Chrysler.
Yeah, the
Marchionne. Right. He writes this article, right? What does he get in exchange for that? Well, Forbes magazine stands to gain what? Advertising dollars in Forbes magazine from where? From Chrysler. So it's one pocket filling the other. One back
scratching
the other. I have a
question for you, Reese.
Say again?
I have a question.
Sure.
Who do you think acted with more leadership dynamic, Christie or Bloomberg?
Christie surely
now, Christie
did.
Christie said, I love you, Barry, and Mitt Screw. And Bloomberg said, Barry, don't let the door hit you on the way up, but don't come to New York.
Well,
but he also then turned around and endorsed him, which I find baffling.
No. See, here's the thing.
Not
it
really.
Doesn't matter what Bloomberg does.
Bloomberg
is working as a mayor this time around. He doesn't have to care. This guy is literally free-falling through his mayorship in New York. Nothing he does can be scrutinized because it's not like he's running for re-election. He can do whatever it is that he wants to do. He can say whatever it is that he wants to say. And it doesn't matter because once it's over, it's over. It's not like he's running for another term, so he can free fall through this. Where
do you think he'll limit the New York to only 16 ounces of gasoline?
let's hope that doesn't happen because New Yorkers will be furious. And I want to talk about that as well because the scary comparison to this in 1979. But
I see Christie for Christie. Especially in light of his keystone address, his keynote address.
Right. Christie's going to run for president beyond a shadow of a doubt.
And with Mitt out of the way in 4 years, it gives it a clear shot for him.
Right. Even if it's 8 years or another 12 years, he's going to run.
You know, and here's the thing also. I've talked to a lot of people who are of liberal sentiment or they lean left, and they think, well, you know what, even Christie had wonderful things to say about Obama, and I basically said, you don't understand politics. What Obama wanted to do was to make himself the most accessible that he possibly could to Christie, to get Christie, one of his largest detractors, to say something positive about him on national television. Okay.
But wait a minute. But hold on. Even with that being said, Joe, it's about New Jersey. And politics are local. Whether you believe it or not, politics are local. And here's President Obama looking like a hero, looking presidential in New Jersey, in a state that he's going to win. That's it. What the only thing he gained was more support in a state he was already winning. New Jersey's not in play. So Chris Christie is the only person who benefits here. Chris Christie.
So you're telling me
like
Chris Christie cannot be related to Lou Christie, who had the hit song in the 60s, Two Faces Have I.
Well, that might be true. But the bottom line is Christie is serving Christie here. And
right.
Remember, he's got right now, he's got like a 58% approval rating. If this
but the
guy
other thing that
out,
Dick Morris had said earlier in the year about Christie is the closer you get to New Jersey, the more people despise him. He's like Gorbachev. He's more popular outside his borders than inside.
And he also had
a problem of maybe getting himself reelected because New Jersey does not elect on the even years, but on the odd years. I believe New Jersey is up for election next year.
But hold on. Let's
the only reason why he unseated Corzine is because Corzine was a corrupt hack.
Go ahead, Edward. Hold on one second, Joe. Let me hear Edward real quick. He's really low.
I work with a lot of people from Jersey, and I have a lot of friends from Jersey. And it's one thing that all these liberals say. They don't like Christie's personality, but they love what he's doing with his job. They don't like him personally. They don't want to sit down with him and have a beer, but they love that he's putting his foot to the union's necks, getting the goddamn situation in Jersey under control. They don't like him personally, but they love what he's doing.
Yeah, because, again, Jersey, or as liberal as they are right now, Christie came at the right time. When they had their insurance rates skyrocket under Corzine, and for years it had been like that, with everything, with the property taxes that went up under Corzine, with insurance rates in New Jersey. I think New Jersey has the highest car insurance rates than anyone in the country. And we had the pension, the public worker pensions going on in New Jersey that were just out of control, of course, as well as the teachers union. They had all of that stuff going out of control. Here is a Republican who is associated with Bush throughout the entire campaign, like that campaign of Chris Christie versus Bob Corzine, John Corzine. With that whole political campaign, the only thing they kept mentioning about Christie was that, oh, he worked under Bush, he worked under Bush, he worked under Bush, and he still won. It was because at this particular point, no one wanted to go through that again. Here's a guy who said he was going to rein in all of these people who were taking all of their tax dollars. He did that. I know they did it with holding their nose, as Derek the Bounty Hunter likes to say. It was an election that they held their nose, but it was costing them in their pocketbooks, and they had to
make that
choice.
Who's going to win the fight between the governor and the mayor of Atlantic City? Who's going to win that spat?
First of all,
the
mayor of Atlantic City has got no record to run on. Because if you look outside of those casinos where the people live, that is a shithole.
Yeah, it is.
It is the worst ghetto outside of Camden in New Jersey.
But they had promised that having casinos was going to be the new life for the state, for that area, just like they do the same thing in other depressed areas. They say, well, bring in the Indian casinos and we're going to have good times rolling again. And guess what? It doesn't really happen that way.
No, it takes a cultural mentality, a shift in cultural mentality to change that. No industry in the world is going to change it. It takes a cultural kind of realization. Perhaps we're not doing something correctly. Perhaps we're codifying wrong values, that keeps perpetuating bad cycles. That's finally what changes things, I think, in an area. But, you know, to kind of go off of this, I think, you know, personally, I don't like what Christie did regarding Mitt Romney. I think that, you know, on national television, he said, I could give a rat's ass. He didn't say that, but he said in so many words, I could give a rat's ass, you know, less if Mitt Romney comes here and helps out with disaster relief efforts, when he actually was all up and down the East Coast delivering, you know, perishables and other necessities to the disaster victims. And I don't know, I just think he really...
But that begs the question,
Joe. He acted very boldly.
That begs the question.
For no apparent reason on national television, and I disagree with that.
But this begs the question. If Mitt should lose, will the Republican establishment, Republican faith, remember that and stick it to Christie 4 years from now in the primaries?
You really believe that'll happen? I don't believe that'll happen.
No, I think it'll be a long... It'll
will they blame him partly and saying, hey, you helped defeat Mitt?
Well, I don't like that mentality, because now we're already conceding that Mitt Romney's going to lose.
I didn't say that. We're conjecture. It's called political gaming.
Well, I think that what Christie was doing was, the way I look at it, is that what he was securing his political career in New Jersey, which is where he wants to stay. I really believe that that's where he wants to be for a long time. He wants to be a successful governor in New Jersey, and I think that it's for political gain later on in his life, because I am certain that Chris Christie, with all of the accolades and his national sort of appeal, that he believes that gives himself enough time, keeps himself right out there in the forefront, that he's got a shot at a national election. I see it.
The other question is, Reese, on this.
He also needs time to lose a little weight.
Oh. What do you say?
Say again, Edward.
I said I agree with you on this. You know, he needs some time to build a record, and he also needs a little time to lose a little bit of weight to look better on TV.
Well, it sounds crass, but it's true. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question.
He needs to lose weight, or he won't win an election.
The recent moves of Romney gaining, of all places, Minnesota, is that a head feint to make Obama spread his resources? Or do you think this is a trend somewhere that we're not noticing, that Romney is really moving up that you don't notice in the polls? It's going to be an even bigger win than the lamestream media would have you believe.
Well, it's interesting because I'm going to cite Karl Rove on this one. And
yep.
I think Karl Rove has it dead to rights on the polling that we're seeing in places like Minnesota, even in Ohio. But no, what I've noticed that he said was that the format that they're using in the current polls now, he keeps saying that each and every one of them has a +3, +5, +6 on Democrats voting in each and every one of these polls. And they're basing it off the 2008 numbers, as if to suggest that those same numbers, the voter turnout is going to be the same in 2012. We know that's not going to be the case in 2012. Not as many Democrats are enthusiastic about this election as they were 4 years ago. So with that scale, if Romney is just within the margin of error, and the quote unquote conservative enthusiasm is what? I think it was 7 points higher than it was last year. I think that it's a sure bet that each and every one of these polls are completely flawed.
Plus, you know, the weather is going to be very inclement. Another northeaster is not as bad as Sandy, but it's going to be another northeaster on election day in the East Coast.
I believe so too, and a lot of people are forgetting this as well. You know, for years, since I can remember with the Carter administration, running against Ronald Reagan, the all-important independent vote, the independents, I've heard it throughout my childhood. Do you ever notice that this year, with Mitt Romney, 53%, I believe it is, of the independent vote versus Obama, who I think has got in the 30s, 39, I think his number is.
That's right.
with those numbers, 53 to 39 in the independent vote, now you hear every political pundit saying one thing. Oh, I believe that the independent vote is just a slither of what it's been in the past. Really? What happened? Now all of a sudden nobody's an independent? Just 4 years ago, independents were all over the place. And now that the numbers are against Obama, now all of a sudden that independent vote is only 3% of the vote. I think everybody is so polarized here that only 3% of the actual national vote is really the independent vote.
I'm
going to
give you
that.
A prediction, too.
Yeah, if I may just quickly, I mean, an analysis of mine, and a lot of other people have pointed this out, unemployment is high. Job growth is historically low. The national debt increased by $5.98 trillion. The Libya scandal, you know, fast and furious, you know, a very non-transparent administration. And if you look at all of the internal polling data, people, you know, when people are polled, do you think this country's on the right track? 55% say no. 38% say yes. With all of this internal polling data being constructed, it simply doesn't line up with Obama's lead in the mainstream polls.
You're right.
Completely opposite. It's like, wait a minute. From internal indications about the direction of the country and different popular opinion based upon the Affordable Care Act and a number of other issues, the vast majority of Americans say, hell no, we don't want this, or this is a bad move on Obama's part, and we don't believe the country is going in the right direction, yet he has this, you know, advantage somehow in the polling data. And it doesn't make sense.
Dennis, last point before we go to break.
You're breaking up.
Oh, I was going to say last point before we go to break.
Yes. I'm saying that all politics is local. You will not see, if Obama wins and Scott Brown loses, you will not see John Kerry being the U.S. The next Secretary of State. Do you know why? Because then that gives Brown an opportunity to run for the vacated seat, and the Democrats won't do that.
That's right. They do not want a Republican to be a senior senator of Massachusetts. They'll never have it. You're absolutely right.
And they're thinking that Brown might run for governor of the Commonwealth.
He could win that.
He loses.
He could win that. He can win that.
He's a winner no matter what happens on Tuesday.
Sure enough. All right. We'll take a break, folks. Stick around. We'll be right back. We'll talk about the eerily similar gas lines of 1979 happening today. You go to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. It's our lead story. We'll be back. It's Reese on the Radio.
barely see the road from the heat coming off. Reach down between my legs, ease the seat back.
On the radio 38 minutes after the hour on November the 1st, 2012. Now, I don't know if anybody went to resetradio.com today and saw what it is that I posted, but please, folks, tell me whether or not I am watching either history repeat itself or I am going, I don't know, am I in a Twilight Zone or what? Okay? We haven't had a... What did we have? We haven't had... A U.N. ambassador, a U.S. ambassador killed since 1979, and now, here in 2012, we get Chris Stevens. Then we get this gas shortage thing in 1979, and now there are long lines at the pumps. People walking, standing on lines, long lines, for 4 hours. Lines a mile or two long. What's happening? Isn't this officially Carter 2.0? How is this happening all over again? Now, I've been reluctant to suggest that Mitt Romney is Reagan-esque. I have not, on the other hand, been reluctant to say that Barack Obama is Carter-esque. Because to me, he damn sure is, beyond a shadow of a doubt. I think that Carter was weak. He was a straight punk. I think he was fearful. He was a peanut farmer from Georgia. I don't think he's ever been in a scuff in his life. I think he's never, ever been punched in the face. He's never ever been punched in the jaw. Even drinking with his friends, I think he never, ever had a fist of cups with his friend about some big-breasted girl in a red sweater. I don't think it's ever happened to him. And another thing that I noticed, and I know you folks have noticed it too, do you remember that famous line by Jimmy Carter about talking about the most important threat to our existence is nuclear war? His 8-year-old daughter, Amy, said, "Dad, what about nuclear war?" And then Obama did the same thing when it came to the oil spill. Oh, hell! That's right. The last major oil spill in the United States happened in the Gulf of Mexico in 1979. Another oil spill takes place. And what does Barack Obama say at a press conference? Little Malia or Sasha? I think it's Sasha. That's the youngest one. "Daddy, have you plugged up the hole yet?" Global warming fanatic that Sasha is. "Daddy, did you save the fishies? Is Nemo gonna die?"
shut your ass up and go crook. Color something.
That's what I just told her. That's the first thing I said. Daddy, have you filled the holes yet?
When have you ever been interested in my job, Sasha? When have you ever been interested in my job? You know I'm in here shaving. Get out of here. Go eat a carrot. Whatever. But give me a break. Seriously. They're so eerily similar. And now with the gas lines, I don't know how anyone cannot compare the two. How can this guy win? It just can't happen. But I want to know whether or not you guys saw the same thing. JC, tell me that this doesn't seem eerily similar.
Uh-huh.
Oil spill? JC, oil spill? UN ambassador killed? Long lines of gas?
Season 5 now. But the white girl...
I'm going to Edward in Connecticut. Edward.
Hey, Reese. I'm sorry, but I have to disagree. I'm really going to have to disagree with you strongly on this one.
Really?
Yeah, the lines in 1979 with Jimmy Carter were caused by his foolish idea to put price controls on gasoline. That caused people's greed to go out of control. This is more of a supply and demand. What's happening in Jersey right now is there are a lot of places in Jersey without power. People need gas. So what's happening is that the people, let's say your town is Newark, you have no electricity, you've got to go to the next town over to try to get that gas that you need for your car. So there's more demand being put on the places that are able to pump gas, but there are gas stations, they have gas in the ground, the gas is just sitting there, but it can't be pumped because there's no electricity.
Oh, no. I understand that. I'm not saying that the Obama policies have caused this. Now, think about what I'm saying. The Benghazi thing, I'm going to say that that was probably, I can't use the word Obama's fault, but his lack of leadership there caused that death. But I don't think it's directly because of him.
Oh, certainly, yeah.
Right. We cannot say that the oil spill is a product of Barack Obama in any particular way. You can't put the blame on him. It doesn't fall on his lap. I'm just saying that these incidents appear to be happening on his watch, just as they did the Carter administration, regardless of the circumstances of how they happened. I just find it eerie that this, it's literally the same thing.
Well, I agree with you to a certain extent, but I think that the gas lines are just pushing it a little bit. You know, yeah, they're reminiscent. If you take pictures of the 1979, you take pictures today, yeah, the long gas prices, get long gas lines, high gas prices, people are going to control. But I think the basic causes are really radically different in this case. And you know that I am not an Obama supporter.
I totally get what you're saying. It's like this is not something like that happened due to the policies of the administration. I get that. They had a storm and everything. I just find it just scary that I'm watching these same incidents sort of happen under different circumstances, of course. But I just find it so odd that this is it's very deja vu to me.
I actually blame his administration more for the oil spill than I think you do, because his administration definitely does not want any oil drilling happening anywhere close to the coastlines. So this forces the oil companies to go out further than they usually would, which means you have
to. You want some more deja vu?
I kind of understand what you're saying. It's like it happened to the two worst potential presidents we've ever had. And not saying which one is the worst or which one is the second worst, because you can look at it either way.
Yeah, but people keep talking
about
how
Obama brother factor.
Go ahead, Dennis.
You forgot to remember Billy Beer. He was involved in the alcohol industry. Obama's brother. You know, Omar, or whatever the hell his name is,
George,
got involved with the DUI and works in a liquor store in Framingham.
Oh, no, that's his uncle.
His uncle. Still, close enough.
Yeah, that's true.
Africa, his uncle
but,
could
but,
be
you know, but
brother.
There's something here that if you notice. What the first thing the liberals said, the cause of the storm, Al Gore, it's global warming. It's the environment that we're not allowed to control. And so we have to stop the global warming and take care of the environment, right? So what happens? Now you don't have fuel because of the storm, because of what happened with global warming, and we have to protect the air quality. So what does the government do? Immediately they just relaxed the air quality standards to allow for more gasoline to be brought up to the Northeast. You know, they're having it both ways.
Sounds like liberals to me.
Let me talk a point to push that Chevy
bolt.
But also
the EPA standards, Also, EPA, the EPA standards have been outrageously unfair to a lot of these oil drilling companies. And, yes, it has affected supply and demand. So I'd be willing to say that Obama's policies to a certain extent have kind of produced this kind of malarkey that we're currently seeing on the East Coast with long lines, because licensing and permits have been cut by over 50%. We're not nearly bringing in as much oil as we should be for our domestic economy. And
Dick Cheney said just before we got elected that America needs more refineries.
Brought into our domestic markets.
Joe, I don't know if you remember that.
The Obama administration used that oil spill as a means to start cracking down on oil. I mean, remember what they did. They had a six-month moratorium on offshore.
I mean, why do you think fuel prices are up? Because the supply isn't there to meet the demand, and then prices go up to compensate the lack of profit.
That hurt a lot of people, that oil spill. But what the administration did after the fact was just absolutely unforgivable.
But you remember what Dick Cheney said?
He said that there
America
needs to be
has
more
plenty
oil
of fuel. We need, what good is having the crude if you can't refine it? But you have the NIMBY problem, not in my backyard.
Yeah, and you know who really hurt me with that? And that was when I finally figured out that he was a hack of a Republican. The way that Governor Schwarzenegger responded to that.
Honey!
Oh, I couldn't believe the way he responded to that. We're not drilling off California. I'm like, get out of here. I couldn't believe it.
Because he is a Kennedy era. I returned. Mary Jo and the car were gone.
Well, I just thought that when he said that, I remember that interview he did with George Stephanopoulos back in 2008. And he was just completely against the idea of drilling off the shores of California. And the first thing ran through my mind was, do you know how many Chinese refineries are off the shore of California? It's ridiculous.
Yep. Yeah, do you realize that the Canadians, right, they're oil to us, but we're not buying it, so they're selling it to the Chinese. I mean,
exactly right.
It's ridiculous. And also, I mean, just to throw out more comparisons, the unemployment rate between then and now, job rate, the job growth rate right now is at a historical low. It's actually at late 1970s levels in projections currently. So, there are commodities are also very comparable. I mean, also inflation and wages not keeping up with inflation. That's also another comparable example that we can throw out there. You know, but I think unfortunately, the deciding factor that Carter didn't have on his side was popularity. Unfortunately, Obama is still wildly popular as a person, although people will generally concede that he was an utter failure.
But you know what? It's interesting you say that, Joe, and I'm going to bring White Mike in real quick after I make this statement. You know, people talk about that word popular, you know, but that's not always as positive as you think. Barack Obama is popular, but remember, popularity is not always positive.
Hey, Reese.
Yes, Edward.
I just want to say something real quick. You mentioned about California. A lot of people don't know that there's oil drilling going on right now in the physical state of California, right in the middle of cities all over the place that are just disguised as other buildings. And what I'll do is after we get off the show, I'll send you some links. Yeah, I'll send you some links.
Oh, please send me that.
Yeah.
I'd love to do that. White Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Yeah, well, the gas thing is not a result of oil being scarce. The gas thing is because refineries are scarce. We don't build refineries in this country.
And
there's a massive refinery in New Jersey. there's a big refinery in New Jersey that supplies gasoline to the Northeast. So I'm sure that's offline. And gasoline prices are going to go up because of speculation. But the problem right now in the storm hitting Northeast is they can't get gasoline to the pumps.
Right. A lot of them don't even have electricity to do that.
Yeah, there's no gasoline. So I'm waiting for the media to get off their butts and show the chaos that's happening there. I mean, Drudge seems to show it. There's looting going on and fist fights and guns being drawn. People diving in dumpsters in New York City for food.
I love,
and
you
yet
know, the story.
We don't hear about this.
The story that made me laugh the most, because this I remember very well in 1979, people siphoning gas out of other people's cars.
Oh, it's happening now. They're saying it's happening up there.
I know. That's what I said. That's the story I love the most, because I remember that when I was a kid. I remember my grandfather going into his car and his tank being almost empty, and
yeah,
he knew he had
remember,
been robbed.
Remember they were selling locking gasoline caps?
That's what made them popular. That's what made them popular, because of that whole experience.
Now, the question,
so the question is,
you know, when Katrina went down, it reflected badly on Bush for not handling it properly. Is the media going to give Barack the same treatment for failing and dropping the ball on this?
If they did, he would lose the election, and they know it.
But they wouldn't do that. They would say that these are undue circumstances that happened on his watch that he could do nothing about. But you
and
know what?
What about all the Democratic leadership up there, except for Bloomberg? I mean, it's all Democrat-heavy up there. Why didn't they get their people out and get their act together?
Exactly. I find it odd that Bloomberg, a supporter of Barack Obama, who didn't want him into the city, is not being scrutinized for not going to New York. Bloomberg says, no, I don't need you to come down here, and you just don't go. And New York really appears to be, because the places that I saw in Brooklyn look like hell. Hoboken.
Parts of it. They say that Williamsburg, Brooklyn, is totally untouched, and they're having wild parties, and hipsters are having a good time.
Yeah,
hey, Reese.
They are the chosen people there, you know.
Yep.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Speaking of wild parties, what do you think of Bette Midler's orgy last night?
You know, these are supposed to be the sensitive, liberal.
Exactly.
Yeah, if mentioning the name Bette Midler and orgy in the same sentence will pretty much make me impotent for the rest of my life. Thank you.
Should I add the word bathhouse?
I wish I was there.
That's where she used to perform with Barry Manilow.
Exactly.
as her piano player.
But, you know, the money went for making New York greener. How about getting that money that she raised and taking care of the people of New York City? What the hell's the matter with these narcissistic bastards?
What is he
when I think of Bette Midler,
greener?
When I think of Bette Midler and orgy, I think of that dog on my page.
Hey, Grease, I got a question for you. I caught flack.
Sure.
I don't know if you caught flack from posting the picture of the chimpanzee with the Obama shirt.
Of course not.
I caught it.
You did?
I caught some flack.
Please tell me, where did you get flack from?
Liberals. They said, that's racist. Are you saying that we Democrats are all monkeys and apes? They
you just respond
understand
by saying,
the,
yes.
The parallel of hear no evil, see no evil, and speak no evil. I think they project their own problems onto what they see.
You know what you're
talking about?
You
stick
you,
a little,
you
stick a little
thing.
Sign on your page that says hear no shit, talk no shit, take no shit.
I like that. Did
well,
you
let me explain this. This was a picture of a chimpanzee with his hands on his ears when Obama
yeah,
Biden
blue,
shirt.
The blue
they're
shirt
talking
on.
About Benghazi.
Yeah, the blue shirt.
But wait a minute.
Yeah.
Did you post this on Culture and Politics?
Yes, Kultur und Politik.
Well,
and then later
okay.
on, you posted on your page. I don't know where you got it, because I took it from somewhere else.
Well, I would have thought, you know what, I'll just post it on there, and I wait until somebody responds to it.
Because I thought, because you posted yourself on your own homepage.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was wondering if you got any flack about it, too.
No one.
The only one that'll give Reeves flack is Eric.
No one gives a damn about what people think. No one gives a damn about what they think. Let them be sensitive.
So, all right, let me ask you this. Given that the fact is going to be a storm on the East Coast on Tuesday, and given the problem that early voting now has really shrunk down in New York, they're not thinking about voting, they think about providing for their needs, do you think this is going to affect anything in the election, either on East Coast, West Coast, or anywhere else? And in what way?
I think that there are going to be some problems in the at the polling places. I do hear that the military is planning on bringing in, like, trucks with voting booths or something like that to accommodate the people who still – or the areas that still don't have power. But, yeah, it's going to be a very sketchy election. I think that – I said this before. I'll say it again. I'm expecting this election to be nothing but Armageddon.
Chaos. Yeah.
I would like to go back to paper ballots. You don't have to worry about a hanging chad or a miscued electronic Soros Spanish machine screwing up the totals or any of that stuff. Just a great big paper ballot knocking with a pencil. Pardon me?
I'm going to pick up one of those Florida machines from the 2000 election.
Are you going to have your chad hang?
For like $20.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Did you see that?
Are you going to try to reverse the 2000 election?
No, I just want to have the machine.
I want to see.
Did you see that on Hardcore Porn?
No. What happened? When did this happen?
Over the weekend. The guy brought it into the shop.
Oh, yes. Yes, I did. The guy brought in he brought in one of the polling. The polling stands from Florida.
Right.
Yeah, I did see that. That was pretty interesting because that was a little small thing.
Yeah, it was. And I'm going to buy me one online for $20. I'm going to find one.
Like briefcases.
Yeah, they are briefcases.
You said it was for how much?
They're like briefcases, little Halliburtons.
Yeah.
I need a case itself is worth more than the machine itself.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. All right, one more show to go tomorrow before the weekend comes, and then you know it's going to be nuts. So, I don't know.
Five
maybe
more
catching
days.
Tuesday?
Hold on.
You know what time it is. It's time for the Friday night dance party.
We'll have to do a Friday night dance party tomorrow. I'll let you guys know. But anyway, that's our show for tonight. Everybody, enjoy your evenings. I love you. I respect you. You'll always be in my heart and in my mind. Remember, we'll be back tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. It's Reseller Radio.